First, we'll look at an Overland Park teenager who plans his life around his favorite online video game to the point where his divorced parents agree on this much: get off the damn computer. While this could be the story in any number of households around the metro, we'll be looking at this through the eyes of one particular teen who's the protagonist in a new young adult novel coming out November 11th and written by former area resident Lawrence Tabak. Larry now resides in Chicago, but we'll find out why he came back to his Johnson County roots for the setting of this story. Joining us now from the Windy City is Larry Tabak. He's author of In Real Life. And Larry, good morning. Nice to have you.
It's great to be here.
Well, Larry, more than half the storyline takes place in and around Overland Park. Why was this your choice? I mean, don't they have gamers out in Chicago?
Well, it's pretty much a universal phenomenon now. But, you know, when you start to write a piece of fiction, at least in my experience, it's better to set it in a setting that you know well and like. And that certainly described my experience living in suburban Kansas City. Those are great times, and it was a great way to come back and revisit them in the book.
Well, the dedication to the book reads, "To my gamers, Josh and Zach." These are your sons, I take it?
Yes, I have two boys, one who was born in St. Joe's in Kansas City, and both of them are avid gamers.
How old are they now?
Well, they're now in their 20s. So when I started this book, it takes quite a long time to both write and publish a book. They were still teenagers, but they're both still actively involved in gaming. And I think that's true for a lot of kids that grew up with gaming, with electronic gaming. It's not something that they simply stop doing when they hit a certain age.
Okay, I've got to ask, have they read the book?
Yes, they both read the book and had some particulars that they helped me with in terms of sort of the technical side of it.
I can only imagine. Well, you've dabbled a bit in gaming as well. According to the book jacket, you took a turn at the harder stuff like Pong and Tron. Were you any good, or did your sons inherit their ability from their mother?
Well, I wouldn't take any credit for their dexterity in playing these games. But I would say that I got involved with their gaming from an early age, and I think that's not unusual. I mean, when they were quite young, they would ask me for help with their challenging games, and then as they got older, they sort of surpassed me. But it was something that we did together, and so a lot of times I think gaming is considered to be sort of a solitary, you know, basement, dark room kind of pursuit. But I don't think that's always true. I think there's a lot of social elements involved with it as well.
Because your sport actually was tennis, wasn't it, Larry?
Yes. In fact, I was employed for a while in the tennis world in suburban Kansas City. I worked at the at a tennis club in Overland Park.
Well, your book, In Real Life, has at its center Seth Gordon, just about to turn 16. He's absorbed with the online video game Starfare. Like a lot of kids with obsessions, he dreams of finding glory by turning pro. Now, first, I've got to tell you, I didn't know you could go pro in this, but Seth is different. He's got a plan, really an actual plan. What's his goal here, Larry?
Well, unlike a lot of pop culture, the United States is actually trailing behind in the area of professional gaming and high-end gaming. The center of that is in East Asia and particularly in South Korea. So most young gamers are well aware of that, and Seth is as well and aspires to join that world.
What's so intriguing to him about it?
Well, it's one of the interesting things that attracted me to this whole story, which is, you know, kids, teenagers particularly, tend to get deeply involved in pursuits. They become very passionate about things, whether it's, you know, sports or music, and in this case, video gaming. And it's a difficult question. I mean, it's more of a philosophical question about why that is so. And one of the aspects of the book, I think, that addresses this is that I create an older brother for Seth, who is an accomplished basketball player, actually a Division I collegiate basketball player. And what the counterpoint is that, of course, you know, he spends his entire youth obsessively shooting, you know, this round ball at a steel hoop,
mm-hmm.
and everyone around him thinks it's the greatest activity in the world. He gets tons of support, particularly from his father. But when Seth decides that he wants to pursue this other world, he gets no support. And it's kind of an interesting cultural bias, I think, that some, on the face of it, you know, arbitrary activities are lauded and others are considered to be wasteful.
Yeah, that still persists today. Why do you think that's still the case? Why do you think there's such a bias against gamers? Because there is. You're hitting on a very good point there. Why is that?
Well, I think part of it is the fact that it's generational. I mean, my kids grew up with the evolution of gaming. I mean, my older son, who's still involved in the business, actually his lifeline sort of recapitulates Nintendo's. You know, he was born when at about the same time that the first Nintendo system came out. So that people that are in the least up to now that have been parents have not lived through that experience. You know, my own prediction is that the next generation will see instead of stage moms and little league dads, we're going to see video game parents who are pushing their kids into it.
Wouldn't that be a switch?
That will be.
We're visiting with Larry Tabak about his new book, In Real Life. It comes out in just a couple of weeks. It's about kids and gaming and lots of other things as well. Now, Larry, both your sons have been members of pro gaming squads. Do I have that right? And how do they manage to get to that level?
Well, it's really my older son, Josh, who's been in that world, although, as I said, they're both avid players of various games. You know, this whole world has gone through a major change in the United States in just the last few years. To give you an example, this past July in Seattle, there was a tournament called the International, mm-hmm. for a game called Dota 2. And I know a lot of your listeners, that doesn't mean a lot, but I bet if they're under 20, it does.
Mm-hmm.
The tournament was the largest esports events in history. It had a total purse of over $10 million. And it just shows the revolutionary change that's going through this entire business. But to answer your question directly, my older son just simply sort of gravitated up the ranks. You know, he was an avid player, and it turned out one with some talent and was willing to work hard at it. And you know, the story I tell is I called him up when he was a senior in college at University of Wisconsin, and we were chatting, and I wasn't getting much information out of him as usual. And so I decided to ask him a little bit about gaming, because I know that's always been something that he's interested in. And I said, you know, so how's your gaming going? And he says, well, it's funny you ask. He says, I'm actually number one. I go, you know, number one in your club? And he goes, no. I said, well, you know, like number one on your server or something in a league? He said, no. I said, well, what? He said, well, I'm number one in the world. And I didn't know whether to be appalled or proud. You know,
well, I was going to say,
mixed moment.
How did you react to that as a former tennis player yourself who had success with traditional athletics? How did you react to your son's success? And is that a sign of the changing mores of society here a little bit?
I think so. I think I'm sort of like in that parental crux, you know, where, you know, I understand it, but because I haven't really lived it, it's still a bit of an alien thing. So I did have mixed emotions about it. I wasn't sure whether that was really a sensible way to spend your spare time or whether, you know, as a college student, you should be, you know, pursuing intellectual pursuits and
that's the theory
in your social life.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
But, you know, as I thought about it since, you know, it really isn't any different in a lot of ways from other kinds of obsessional pursuits.
Yeah.
You know, as I said in the book, you know, I have a basketball player. I mean, what makes that any different? And I hear that a lot from serious gamers. They say, you know, how come we don't get no respect? You know, if I was playing baseball or volleyball or football, people would think I was, you know, on top of the world. And now, you know, all you get is grief.
You know, this is so interesting to me.
I've
never looked at it until now in the way you're describing it, Larry, this notion of I used to play basketball a lot, and there was something very obsessive about it, wanting to go out on the court and shoot the ball through the hoop, and you do it over and over again. And there is a certain obsessive quality to that, just as you're describing gaming here. There's the two. I see a link now that maybe I didn't see before.
Well, I think it speaks to the attraction of games, just not just video games, but games in sports and in all their manifestation. Think how seriously people take their games,
mm-hmm.
more seriously maybe than anything else in their lives, right? You're mm-hmm. living through the Royals craze, right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it really captures something fundamental about being human, I think. And, you know, there's been some philosophers that have actually worked on this. There's a guy named Huizinga, Johann Huizinga, who wrote a book called Homo Ludens, which means man, the game player. And it's his thesis that games are really fundamental to civilization.
Huh.
And there's a little aside in the book where my character, Seth, goes to visit his mother, who's gotten involved in sort of a new age ashram type facility in California. And they hook him up to a brainwave machine and ask him to play this game, right? And they come out awed because his brainwaves are similar to what they've found in like Zen monks and Hindu gurus.
Mm-hmm.
And they go, you know, this thing is, you know, he's somehow transcending. And I think that's part of the attraction is that you get into a groove, as you know, when you're playing basketball.
Yeah.
And it's
yeah.
just like you're in another world.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a very addictive thing, but not, I don't think, necessarily a negative addiction. I think it's a positive one.
Well, in the book, Larry, Seth knows that he's pretty darn good for an American player, and he thinks he's got a real shot at making the pro ranks. He realizes at 15 what many people take a lifetime to learn. I want to quote Seth here just for a moment. He says
sure.
that very few people have what it takes to be great at any particular thing. And if you find that thing and don't go for it, that would be the ultimate fail. So tell me, Larry, what was this part of your credo as a young man for yourself or advice you gave to your own kids or what?
Well, I think you hit on something. I mean, it's something that I think has been a part of my life, and maybe that's one of the reasons I was attracted to this kind of story, is that, you know, whenever I was involved in something, I was always interested in doing it as well as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So there's sort of a streak of search for excellence kind of attitude that I think permeates Seth and maybe comes from the author. And it's probably reflected, you know, in my family and in a lot of families. Having said that, I think, again, there's a strong differentiation between, you know, obsessions which are negative and those that which
yeah.
Are elevating. And I think this comes into that category. Although, as you know, if you've finished the book, it's a mixed blessing when you make that transition from doing something you love to being forced to do it for commerce.
Yeah.
And that's where play sometimes no longer is play anymore.
Hmm. Well, Seth is getting enough schoolwork done to pass his classes. Again, speaking of the character in the book, most of his classes are these AP, you know, advanced placement courses. He's spending every spare minute online playing Starfare, where he's analyzing multiple situations, you know, at lightning speed. He's multitasking like nobody's business. You wrote Seth as a genius, but not the stereotypical overachieving type. He's very understated. Why a genius and not just some average suburban kid with a particular talent, Larry?
Well, first of all, if you find yourself in a situation where you can meet some of these high-end top gamers, I mean, they are smart kids.
Mm-hmm.
It takes some real brain power to play these games in real time. A typical high-level pro gamer playing one of these types of games makes over 400 actions per minute with their keyboard and mouse.
Mm.
So they are just buzzing. And it's a bit like the concentration involved, I say, would be similar to playing chess, but in chess in which the positions are changing constantly. So you look at a player after he's played a 30, 40-minute game, and he's just drained. Mm-hmm. And I should say it could be he or she. There are high-end gamers that are women or girls, although it's predominantly a male thing still. But that also is in transition, I believe. But the intensity involved is just incredible.
400 decisions, 400 movements a minute. I'm just doing the math here. That's six a second, Larry.
Yeah, if you look at them, it looks like someone is just like, you know, if you took a picture of the hand movements of a top gamer, it would look like a little kid coming up to the panel and just like banging away at it as hard as and fast as he could. You know, it's hard to believe that those are actually calculated moves, but of course they are.
Hey, this notion that the game, these gamers are mostly male, why is that? What is it about this world that seems to attract, boys and men instead of girls and women?
You know, it's a pretty interesting question. I'm not sure I have the answer to that. I think that there's probably some history there. I think it's cultural. I think there's a lot of things going on. I mean, an analogy, and maybe not a perfect one, would be think back to the early days of rock and roll. I mean, where was the female Elvis Presley?
Mm-hmm.
You know, where were the female Beatles? I mean, that is now completely turned on its head, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the top pop music stars are singers, you know, like Beyonce or Lady Gaga.
Mm-hmm.
But that wasn't true. And I don't know exactly what the roots of that are. But certainly if you look at who's developing games right now, it's largely male. And if you look at, you know, who are the top players, it's largely boys and young men. And of course, that's created some tension in the game as it becomes more of a broad cultural phenomenon, not just a subculture.
I was going to say there's this controversy going on right now. It's called Gamergate, this current situation where women gamers are being harassed. You know, one of the more visible targets is a woman named Anita Sarkeesian. She's a media critic who became a target after she did a series of YouTube videos analyzing the depiction of women in games from a feminist standpoint. She's received a death threat and rape threats as a result. What do you make of it?
Well, it's pretty disturbing stuff.
Yeah, and, no kidding.
I mean, the first thing to say is that there is a lot of substance to this whole controversy. I mean, it all stemmed originally from two major things. One is concern about journalistic ethics in the gaming press, and then the undeniable sexism and misogyny in the gaming world. But, you know, this isn't just the gaming world. You know, you could say much of that about the rest of the world as well, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it also speaks to a really important reactive element, which is, as we said earlier, how seriously people take their games. So there's this vocal subset that is really a disturbing element that has reacted violently against what they consider to be some sort of assault on their world. And I don't, you know, I think it's a minority. I mean, you could post a video on YouTube of two cats playing, and by the third page, there's a, you know, heated profane argument over religion. You know, it's just the digression that seems to be endemic in on the internet, and particularly with anonymous posting.
Well, you know, all she's doing again is pointing out that, you know, there's a number of video games on the market that include violence against women, you know, women as prizes or women in these highly sexualized fantasies. I'm wondering, has any of this been a concern for you as your son sort of launch into the gaming world and spend as much time on it as they did?
Well, I think the content of games is certainly an issue, and I think, fortunately, the types of games that my kids gravitated to, which are strategy games, are less prone to that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And certainly the game that I invented for my book, In Real Life, is a game that doesn't really have at least the elements that have created this, you know, these, I think, legitimate critiques.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you know, you have an industry that's in transition. It's a young industry. It's probably, you know, going to evolve over time. And I think those kinds of critiques are actually quite positive and helpful. And it's unfortunate that there's this small minority that has created this crazy, disgusting reaction to it.
Again, we're visiting with Lawrence Tabak, his new book, In Real Life. It'll be out on the market in mid-November. He joins us this morning from Madison, Wisconsin, the home of your host's alma mater. Just real quickly, we just have a couple minutes left here, Larry. The second part of your story takes place in South Korea, where Seth is invited to be the first American on, you know, on one of that country's top professional teams. Is your description of the pro gamer's life based on reality? And give us a little more sense, too, and how these kids eat, breathe, and sleep gaming.
Well, it's really a crazy training regimen. And one of the things that I think has allowed it to be so is that, you know, to go back to that basketball analogy, there's sort of a limited amount of time and energy that you can put into playing a sport in a day. You know, it's just a physical limitation. That limitation does not exist when you're working in a virtual game. As a result, the training of at the high end is incredibly intense. I was recently talking to a kid who's on one of the top national Dota teams, and he said leading up to this big tournament I mentioned, the international, they were training 10 hours a day, 7 days a week.
That's such a funny idea to a lot of people, kids training 10 hours a day by playing games.
Well, it is kind of crazy, and that's I think one of the intriguing elements of the book as it develops is what happens when suddenly you go from, wow, I wish I could do this all day long, to someone saying, you will be doing this all day long.
Yeah.
And it does tend to change the tenor of the activity. But I must say that the people that are involved in this seem to be absolutely enamored with the activity. I mean, I don't sense that they're being pressured into it, at least the U.S. players. The world I depict in Korea is a little bit more sort of hierarchical and demanding,
yeah,
which I think is a cultural truth.
Well, just such an interesting world that you introduce people to in this book. Again, the book is titled In Real Life. The author is Lawrence Tabak. And Larry, I really enjoyed having you, and thanks for exposing me to something that I didn't know as much about as I probably should, given how much time my own sons have spent playing some of these games.
Well, it's been great being on the radio, and I should mention that I'll be at Barnes & Noble West on November 22nd signing books and talking about the book in person.
This is Barnes & Noble West.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, Barnes & Noble Overland Park.
Overland Park, sure.
Oak Park.
Yeah. Yes, at the Oak Park
so
Mall.
November
sounds
22nd.
Good. November 22nd. Sounds good. Larry, thanks so much for your time. Sure good to have you.
Hey, it's been my pleasure. Great talking.
You bet.